Hello, I'm Brian Lee Crowley, author of Fearful Symmetry, The Fall and Rise of Canada's Founding Values. 20 years ago, I did a two-hour program for CBC Radio about Nobel Prize-winning economist Friedrich Hayek. Here's an extract from those broadcasts where I discuss Hayek's relationship with John Maynard Keynes.
Hayek found Keynes a frustrating antagonist. Soon after arriving in England, the earnest Austrian had spent a year preparing a response to one of Keynes's books. When his critical review appeared, Keynes confounded him by saying that he himself no longer agreed with the ideas he had expressed in the book. Even so, Hayek couldn't help falling a bit under the spell of this mercurial figure. Norman Berry.
I think in some ways Hayek was mesmerized by Keynes. Keynes had effortless ability, anything, mathematics, economics, art. And Hayek was rather a dour man in some ways, who thought about a problem, thought it through. Keynes, he thought, was too talented by half. He solved a problem overnight and carried on to the next one.
Too talented by half. Hayek rapidly came to the view that Keynes and his circle of friends, the famous Bloomsbury group of intellectuals amongst others, recognized no limits to what human intelligence could do, especially their own. Their view seemed to be that the human mind was up to discovering the workings of every aspect of life, and by taking thought, improving on it. The 20th century seemed to them the age of great enlightenment. It would sweep away the old traditions, customs, and habits that stood in the way of human happiness. Virginia Woolf, a renowned member of this circle, wrote of this time, "Everything was going to be new. Everything was going to be different. Everything was on trial." Keynes himself, writing in his memoirs, tells of how the 20th century seemed to them all to usher in a new era. It was exciting, exhilarating, the beginning of a renaissance, the beginning of a new heaven on a new earth. We were the forerunners of a new dispensation. We were not afraid of anything. In economics, this meant one should abandon the old notions of self-correcting markets, which work slowly and only in the long run. The market, left to itself, had produced the human suffering and waste of the Depression. Surely brilliant minds could use the science of economics to do better. Meghnad Desai.
Keynes had, of course, written about money in cycles before. But in 1936, in his General Theory, what he came to write about was a fundamental doubt that unregulated markets can always lead to full employment. He tried to establish the idea that markets, without any interference from anybody else, could get stuck into a situation where you will have less than full employment. In a sense, in the midst of scarcity, you would have waste of resources. And therefore, Keynes' view was that unless some external help came, the economy would not get out of this trap.
The external help that Keynes was proposing was to increase the purchasing power of consumers, put more money into their pockets. If the economy was in a trap of permanently high unemployment, he argued, use the tools that government has at its disposal to increase demand. Extra demand could be created, Keynes said, by manipulating interest rates, cutting taxes, increasing spending on public works such as roads, sewers, and so forth. The stimulus to the economy would create new jobs. Unemployment would fall. We would spend our way out of the slump. True, the economy might not be able to keep up with all the new spending power of consumers. Some of the new money might simply go into higher prices. Keynes acknowledged this threat of inflation, but he was confident it could be contained through clever management. Norman Berry.
I think that Keynes was always a fixer, a man with the latest economic gadget, brilliantly worked out. It was totally plausible, and of course he could sell it. I mean, he could sell his ideas with his flair for language, his eloquence, and his style. Years later, of course, we could say, well, maybe Hayek did have a point, that we have to rely upon things which are not amenable to manipulation. And this was the Keynes view. As a brilliant man, anything could be manipulated. He had a solution to everything.
Keynes presented his recommendations in a General Theory in 1936. Hayek was not persuaded. No doubt Keynes's approach would create jobs in the short run, But Hayek could not forget the lesson of inflation in the early 1920s. Keynes's plan to inflate the economy would distort the signaling mechanism of prices and incomes. False signals would lead people into jobs that existed only because of government action. Hayek foresaw the creation of a true vicious circle in which larger amounts of inflationary spending would be required to maintain employment. At first, though, he chose not to respond to Keynes's general theory. He thought it might be yet another of the brilliant prescriptions that Keynes tossed off and then discarded. This time, he was mistaken. The world was desperate for answers to the Depression. Keynes's promise of full employment met an eager response, first in the universities, then in governments, as the new economic policymakers spread the word.
Now, the LSE, before 1936, the Hayekians were dominant, because they had this trade cycle theory that said these depressions have to be worked through, there's no shortcut solution to happiness. And if you disrupt it, then you'll make it even worse than you've got at the moment. But the Cambridge people, and it may be a class thing, were supremely confident of the ability of governments to take a shortcut solution. Hayek, I think, lost the debate with Keynes because his ideas were rather unattractive at the time. You don't tell, 20% of the workforce unemployed that it'll be all well if you allow the market to work. But if you produce a theory which is not only intellectually sophisticated and respectable with the economic establishment, as Keynes' theory came to be respectable, but is also politically attractive, then you have a winner. And in that sense, Keynes did triumph.
Hayek knew that Keynes had triumphed, and the pill must have been a bitter one to swallow. He'd been brought from Austria explicitly to be the champion of free market thinking, and had been bested by Keynes, whose interventionist theories would become a new orthodoxy. Far from making his reputation, and that had been on his mind when he came to London, he was forgotten by those who earlier had listened to him with attention.
In 1933, Hayek was a favorite of young economists, mean much more than Keynes. By 1946, Keynes was way above almost any other living economist, and nobody could rank with Keynes. Not Hayek, nor Hawtrey, nor Robertson, nor Schumpeter. Nobody could rank with Keynes.
That was an extract from The Vindication of Doubt, a program about the life and work of Friedrich Hayek. I'm Brian Lee Crowley.